It's 6:20. This is Community Matters on KBUT. Please do join the conversation and ask your question by calling 970-349-7444. And now I'd like to take this opportunity to introduce our second guest for the evening. Rhonda Hannaford is the Associate Commissioner for School Quality and Support for the Colorado Department of Education, and we're very happy to have her joining us. Hi, Rhonda, how are you?
I'm great. It's good to be with you today.
So I just wanted to start out by asking a question that I think a lot of folks really are grappling with. Is it safe to send students back to school right now? Why or why not? What is your perspective from the State Department of Education on that?
Going to start me with an easy question right off the bat, huh? So that is a question that everybody is asking. And the situation really looks different across the state. There are some communities, counties that have a really high incident rate, and the way that they're choosing to return can look very different than a county that has a much lower or almost no incident rate, where they can provide more in-person learning opportunities and some, still to apply a lot of those mitigation tactics to reduce the risk of spread so that they remain in one of the counties that has a low incident rate. So it really looks different for each of our schools and districts across the state.
Sure. And I believe my co-host Chris Rourke had a question that she wanted to ask you as well. Chris.
Sure. I wanted to start by saying the Gunnison Watership School District has put in place a 63-page manual on protocols. And this is sort of a two-part question. Is that enough?
Well, I know that the Gunnison School District has done a really great job connecting with their local public health agency. The superintendent, Leslie Nichols, has been in really close contact with the local public health agency and thought through all different types of scenarios, which is really why that document is 63 pages. It's packed with ways to return safely to in-person learning. And as I also believe that the Gunnison School District is providing a remote learning option for families that might choose that too. So there's a lot of things to consider in both of those scenarios so that kids in the end are receiving the educational programming that they need to be successful this year, next year. And then there's, the hybrid approach where you might have a situation where some students are attending in person as well as remote, just depending on the capacity of the school so that they can, apply some of that physical distancing strategies to get students to be in person as much as possible, but also to make sure that they're doing it safely.
The Gunnison Times has a reporter at the school board meeting tonight, and we hope to learn how many students are actually signing up for 100% online learning, which is an option. But, I'm curious, under these circumstances and these different models for learning, are we just sort of going through the motions? Are teachers going to be distracted? I mean, how do we ensure the quality of education? My daughter's going to be a junior this year. How do I know the next 2 years of her education aren't going to be kind of a wash?
Yeah, well, congratulations to your daughter. That's an exciting time to be a junior and upperclassman. That's a darn big deal. And so she's probably really excited to have, those experiences that the upperclassmen typically have at the high school environment. And so the quality of learning, whether that's in person or remote, is dependent upon a lot of different factors. And so some of that can be access to the materials, particularly if it is remote. So having, Chromebooks or laptops, just depending on what the device is, if they're doing online learning, having access to qualified teachers throughout the day to assist that remote learning as needed. I know a lot of schools have thought through, in addition to access to their teachers, but access to like a tutoring helpline throughout the day, and just kind of thinking like through all the different angles so that there can be quality learning that's happening in the building as well as outside the building.
Thank you. Christopher?
It's 6:25. This is KBUT Community Matters. We're speaking with Rhonda Hannaford, who is the Associate Commissioner of School Quality and Support for the Colorado Department of Education. We encourage you to call in and ask your questions. 970-349-7444. And join the conversation. And actually, a listener submitted a question that we got before the show started earlier today. I was happy to pick up the phone and answer Hillary in Crested Butte, who wants to know about some of the growing divide between classes that we've seen widen since in the fallout of the COVID-19 economic crisis. And the example that came to mind is here in Crested Butte, as well as other mountain communities like Vail and Telluride. They're seeing a big bump in enrollment and also a bump in the high-end real estate. So we know that more wealthy people are moving to these communities where there are already very good schools. But Hillary in Crested Butte is concerned about a growing divide in Colorado. Is that something that the State Department of Education is keeping an eye on, thinking about, planning for? What are your thoughts, Rhonda?
Yeah, I really appreciate Hillary's question. It's very thoughtful. You know, it's a core value that we have about caring for all of our students. And helping with their academics, as well as ensuring that they have a connection to their school. And so this scenario that Hillary is describing is something that has been true within our state pre-COVID. This has been a situation that the department has very much, very closely paid attention to and worked to provide resources through grant funding to help support students who might need some additional supports to access their learning. We know that schools do so much more than just focus on academics. For a lot of our children, our schools are a safe place for them. They are a place where they can find access to quality food for breakfast and lunch and sometimes dinner programming. They're the place where if a student needs emotional supports or mental health needs, that school has been the place that is their safe place to get those services. And so Hillary's question is very true. And oftentimes in a crisis, those divides can be really showcased, or a light can be placed on them at a greater extent. They become much more visible. And so what we've done as a department working alongside our schools and districts is to think through, are we ensuring that in the plans to return to school, whether that's in person or remote or a hybrid, or what it looked like over the summertime even, that we were specifically reaching out to families and students who might be in those more impacted communities. And I can tell you that as a former high school principal myself, that there is a lot of relationship building that's required in order to do that thoughtfully. And so I know that's a big part of what our schools and our districts have been doing, not only during this crisis, but historically, that has been their role.
Yeah, Rhonda, I want to get a little bit into the medical end of this, because I think the question that is on every parent's mind after reading the 63-page manual, going back to school at Gunnison Watershed, is kids run fevers. They run fevers. Two, maybe three times a winter. There's always something that comes up. And we're looking at a situation where we have working parents. And when a child runs a fever, you know, they're calling for a minimum of 72 hours to be fever-free before going back to school. So that's 3 days minimum, maybe four. And then the potential of having a COVID test done on a child if suspected of having COVID. You know, is this really realistic? First of all, because of the impacts that it's going to have on employers, is it right to require a COVID test be done on a child? Shouldn't the parents have more say? So maybe you can speak to some of that.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm going to address the first part of the question around the fever.
Okay.
I have two little kids. I have a 7 and 8 year old. They're pretty resilient, but when they go down, they kind of go down pretty hard. But if they get a fever, they're not feeling great. And there's something going on in their body that their body's fighting, which is probably why they have that fever. So it's actually to their advantage to have a little bit of a fever there. Or at least that's been my viewpoint as a mom. But pre-COVID, if my child had a fever at school, I was contacted and asked to pick up my child, right? Because my child's not feeling well and really should be at home. And so that's kind of the same protocol right now. What's a little bit different here is that there's a variety of symptoms, and fever is one of them, that is associated with COVID-19. So that's where this kind of gets a little more complicated of trying to figure out, so is this COVID possibly, or is this like something that can be attributed to another condition that is more typical for your child? And so, you know, parents know their children really well. And, you know, if your child typically has allergies, you know, in the fall, and they usually have a little runny nose or things like that, you can attribute that symptom to a condition that your child typically has this time of year, or if they have asthma, you know, and the list kind of goes on and on. So if you're able to attribute the symptom or symptoms to an existing condition that the child might already have, doesn't necessarily require a quarantine for that student. Now, a fever would still require a student to stay at home and, you know, until the fever passes and you know, follow the school's normal protocols that they've always had in place. But what CDPHE is in the process of doing right now, and that's a bunch of letters. So CDPHE is the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment. Mm-hmm. And so that's where the medical epidemiologists reside, the doctors who we've been working with. And so they've been creating updated guidance to assist schools in helping to make that decision around, you know, what really makes sense for this child. Is this a major symptom that can't be attributed to another condition, and this child also was in close contact with another individual who has a confirmed case of COVID? Well, that would be treated differently than that same student with maybe the very same symptom who was not in close contact with another individual with a confirmed case, and it can be attributed to another condition. So CDPHE and CDE is working alongside them. I have that school lens and that district lens to say, you know, does this flowchart make sense inside of a school setting? And then we've also been working closely with teachers as well as school and district leaders to give feedback into that guidance so that it's practical in that school environment.
So then I'm sorry, go ahead.
And then I think the second part of your question was around testing, and if it would be, you know, is it right for a school to require testing? I think might have been the way that it was worded. So that really would be a decision that would be made with the family alongside the local public health agency. We are working with the state for to gather the list of the free testing sites that are already available throughout our state. We know that sometimes can be a barrier, as well as the turnaround rate. I know the governor is working really hard to have a much faster turnaround rate on those results. And so let's say that we do have a student that might need to be out for a few days while we're, you know, trying to, the local public health agency is trying to get those things resolved with maybe a test or trying to see if the symptoms reside on their own. CDPHE is looking at not having to quarantine the other students who are in that classroom while we're still waiting on some of that other information for the other child.
That was my next question. What happens to should you have a child out 14 days, what happens to the rest of, I believe they're being kept in cohorts. You know, what happens then? I know there's going to be contact tracing going on, but then, you know, we get into a series of either testing or observation, I'm assuming.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And so that's guidance that CDPHE is putting out this week.
Great.
They would be a great guest to have join and to share some of those details. What I can say a little bit to their guidance, and it's still in draft form, is that they're looking at that 3-day window of making a better determination of observing the other child to see if that cohort also does need to quarantine or not.
Okay, so to summarize, it doesn't mean just because a child gets a fever, they have to have a COVID test and they're out for 14 days. There's guidance that's being developed, and there's also working between the parent and public health really to get the best path forward. Is that correct?
That's right. Mm-hmm. Right. Yes. With the support of their school, so the parents not on their own trying to navigate all of that maybe for the first time. I know that would be true for me. I would like the support of the school. And most of our schools and districts have been working very closely with their local public health agency. And I know Gunnison Watershed specifically has.
Well, it would be the best to have a rapid test, you know, and then we're right there.
That would be great.
Christopher, do you have something?
I want to let our listeners know that they can call in and ask their questions for Rhonda Hannaford, Associate Commissioner for School Quality and Support for the Colorado Department of Education. We have about 5 more minutes with Rhonda, and then we will be talking to Dr. Jessica Young, Gunnison Sage-Grouse researcher. So you can call in and ask your questions of her as well. 970-349-7444. Rhonda, I wanted to turn back to this conversation about school quality, about the quality of an education. How is the state keeping track of successes and failures during this chaotic time, in this chaotic school year? So when it comes to quality of education, how will we know how this school year went?
Yeah, so there's a lot of different ways that you can determine how successful a school year went. And I know one of those questions that has been out there that we've heard about is like, you know, are we not going to have state assessments in the spring, right? To figure out how kids are doing. You know, and the state assessments, that's an important topic. And it's one measurement of overall knowing how students are doing. And so those assessments don't happen until much later in the spring. And so we want to pay attention at the school level and the district level much earlier around how students are engaging in their learning. You know, let's say they're remote. Are they accessing the curriculum online? Are they completing assignments? Are they engaged in their school community, whether it's in-person participation or remote learning participation? So we're looking at, you know, how schools and districts are tracking attendance during remote learning opportunities. There's flexibility that schools and districts have of how they track attendance. But one thing that is clear that we've heard from, you know, from so many schools and districts is that they really want to make sure that their students are connected to the learning program that they've selected, whether that's in-person, hybrid, or remote. And so some of the ways you can do that are really basic, like, you know, looking at how many times your student is logging in and completing assignments, same thing in class, right? How engaged are they by asking questions, turning in their work, and then being connected to the greater school. And what that looks like can be look very different from one school community to another, with different activities that they might be a part of during the day or in after school programs or before school programs. And so there's all these things that we can and schools can focus on well before there's any spring state assessment that would be an indicator of their learning. If we do the work in the beginning about building relationships and building strong connections with their school where kids feel safe and that they're valued, then they are much more likely to increase that academic knowledge that ultimately does get assessed in that later state assessment.
I would like to just interject a question. I would think it would be almost impossible to try to compare the state assessment from a year like this to previous years. Perhaps could like a more regional test, like the MAP testing, NWEA's test that we utilize within our own school district, which kind of tracks them more along before you even get to the end of the year. Perhaps that could be a data point.
Oh, most definitely. So, and I am familiar with that test specifically in my former role in Greeley Evans, where we use the NWEA MAP test at the beginning of the year, the middle of the year, and then at the end of the year.
Right.
So it provides you kind of these checkpoints along the way to see how students are progressing with their learning. And a lot of different schools and districts use different sort of assessments to help measure student growth so that they can you know, change course if they need to, focus on specific skills or standards the student might still be struggling with that might not be as apparent in some of the daily activities that they're doing. So definitely using those local assessments is a good way to measure student progress.
You know, I hate to put you out on a limb here, but Would it not be a great opportunity to rethink those state assessments? Because long has been the criticism that by the time you get the results from these state tests, you're already halfway through the next school year and they don't guide learning at all. Perhaps maybe we rethink things and look for those, you know, checkpoints along the school year to better guide education.
Yeah, that's not a limb at all. It's a full grown tree at this point, you're not putting me out on. So we actually have formed a stakeholder group that's coming together in August, around the later part of August, that's going to focus on the impacts of COVID from this past school year and then going into this school year, and specifically looking at assessments, accountability, and then educator evaluations, to make some recommendations back to the commissioner as well as the legislators around what makes sense for this school year. So there's, we had about 200 applications, and so there's great interest in our state for further thinking through this question. And yeah, so we plan to have recommendations by December.
Great, thank you very much.
It's 6:45. This is Community Matters. We have one more question for Rhonda Hannaford, who is joining us as a representative of the Colorado Department of Education on the show tonight. This is a question, a listener submitted question from Sarah in Gunnison, and a parent of an elementary school, two school kids, it looks like. Is there a plan in place to give younger children more frequent outlets, breaks from screen time, like physical activity and recess? How are you dealing with screen time, Rhonda?
Yeah, so I'm going to read a little bit into the question, and I think maybe this is some elementary students, and I can see my little ones in this scenario who were remote and how much screen time they had. So we do have some general guidance from the Department of Education that addresses screen time, as well as that addresses other ways of learning remotely that aren't connected with screen time at all. And then also, you know, if your child is remote and they have screen time, there's a lot of really great activities that teachers have come up with to really support those extracurricular or elective courses. So like choir, for instance. I know that there have been some teachers who have offered choir remotely. And so students participate like in a Zoom call and they're singing and they're getting some one-on-one support that way. Because you know, it's one of those activities that if done indoors or in person could be considered a higher risk activity. So instead of saying no altogether to one type of elective such as choir or some other activity with an increased aerosol rate. You know, are there different ways we can explore the use of screen time? So what makes sense to do remotely in a safer way versus what makes sense to do in person that might be safer?